Welcome, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Architecture of Wealth. For those of you watching on video, as you can see behind me, I am a chartered financial analyst, a certified financial planner, and the owner and founder of Sona Wealth, Sona Wealth Advisors. Thank you for joining us today. Those of you who were looking for Minnesota Nice Investor Goes to College, you're not in the wrong place. We had a format change. As many of you know, I have a lot of passion around helping people prepare for retirement and college. I was burdened with a lot of student loan debt. For a long time into this day, it's become a passion of mine. So we are going to continue to have those conversations around FAFSA, around merit-based aid, need-based aid, around how to balance the two account types and all those things. We're going to start having guests again. So please don't turn the dial, so to speak. It's kind of an old fashioned saying, but please give us a chance because we're still going to have those topics. We're going to have more things. The reason we did it is we wanted to talk about more than just education. We wanted to talk about things like inflation. Today's topic has to do with the down market. So you're not in the wrong spot, and please stick with us. Please still continue to download and subscribe. We will not let you down. Today's topic, we are talking about four ways to take advantage of the market downturn in both stocks and bonds. It's been a rough quarter. I'm recording this on Memorial Day weekend. And for those of you that have served and or sacrificed, have lost loved ones, thank you. I can safely say from my family and from those who work at Sona, we thank you for your sacrifice and your service. But as of Memorial Day, it has not been a great stock or bond market. I think we had a pretty good week last week, but we're still down quite a bit. S&P down almost 20%. So one of the kind of the self-check things that you can do is certainly to take a look at your risk tolerance, revisit that, revisit your financial plan and your investment policy statement, kind of your financial constitution to help you stay the course. And that's a little more reactive. Ideally, you should be doing that on an ongoing basis to where these kind of things maybe affect you less and less. But if you want to be proactive, if you said, I want to take advantage of this downturn, my financial balance sheet is strong, what can I do to take advantage of this downturn? We're going to give you four reasons right now. Those of you on video number four, I'm flashing the sign four, which I don't think has a gang meaning to it. My eighth grader does this all the time. His basketball teams, his eighth grade trip to Washington, D.C., all were flashing number four. I think it has to do with performance in the fourth quarter. I'm not sure. I'm hoping it's a good thing. If you know, let me know. I'd love to feel better about that. But we have four things today to take advantage of the downturn, mostly tax related. First of all, it's front loading. Front loading is where you contribute to your retirement accounts early in the year. You know, in this case, you might be saying, I tend to think that the market's not going to go much lower. Again, you can never time the bottom or the top of the market. Anyone who tells you they can is lying. They would be a billionaire if they knew exactly where the top and bottom of the markets were. But what you might say is, you know what? Historically, it usually doesn't get a whole lot further down than 20%. I'm going to contribute to my 401k or IRA or whatever it is early. Might be a Roth 401k or IRA as well, and then try to take advantage of the downturn, realizing, again, it could go down further, but doing it all at once. We always give you things to watch out for. You know, we want to make sure you're prepared. You know, making the best financial decision possible is what financial planning is, and to do so, you need to know the pros and cons. The cons to doing something like that, the biggest one is your 401k match. Many firms will only match on a month-to-month basis, meaning they'll match up to 3% each month. So if you want to take advantage of that full 3% of your pay contribution, then you have to do it symmetrically over the 12 months. So you could certainly front load if you're contributing much more than three. You could certainly contribute more than three in early months, but you have to do at least three each month to get the match. Just be careful of that. in this situation, when it comes to 401k match, they're really, it's hard to justify not taking advantage of it. So please make sure you're aware of that. Also, for some folks, the timing of income, they might not know how much income they're going to have. For a small business, SEP or solo 401k, it's critical. Be aware of that. For those who even, you know, when you're talking about NSOs and RSUs, you're not sure how much income, you're not sure what you can afford to contribute. So if you're unsure about what income's coming in, both from the rules around different account type contributions, or just from how much you can contribute, that's challenging. So just don't jump and do it. Map it out. Be aware of what you can do, both from your cash flows, from a cash flow, personal cash flow standpoint, and also from, you know, contribution limits. You know, if you're doing a solo 401k, you know, that can be a little complex. Number two, put cash to work. So if you had excess cash for whatever reason, now might be a good time to put it to work. Now might be a good time where you say, again, you can't time the bottom of any market consistently. You might get lucky once, but now might be a good time to put it to work. If your job's secure and your emergency fund is well stocked, now might be a good time. And some of you might do things on a tactical basis. Maybe you have a rule around cash of, say, 5 to 10%. You know, ideally, you have these rules in advance and they're tactical. If you are trying to time the market by selling off half your portfolio and going to cash because you think you can time the top and then going at the bottom, you might get lucky once or twice. But if you can do that, you should be a billionaire, because no one can do it consistently. The smartest minds in the room, the PhDs, the CFAs, none of them can time the exact top or bottom. But from a risk standpoint, you could certainly say, I'm going to overweight cash, underweight it. In our portfolios, depending on the client, we will often have dividends and interest go to cash. We'll let it build up. It's a way of rebalancing. Rebalancing is a sound long-term financial plan. It's a way of making sure your risk profile is where it should be. You know, obviously you could let equities grow from 50% to 90% given enough time. You know, that violates your investment policy statement. That risk profile most likely doesn't suit you. So again, make sure you're being tactical and for the long term rather than day trading and basically gambling and trying to time the market. But if you have cash, might want to put it to work. Number three, tax loss harvesting. So capital gains were a big deal for a lot of people last year, especially those in the higher income brackets. You're talking 23.8% in some cases. Well, if you attach on Minnesota's 9.85%, that's a pretty steep bill. But if you have capital losses to offset it, now might be the time. If the market's down, you might want to take some losses. Be careful of the wash sale rule. Again, watch out for the wash sale rule. You know, if you can reinvest that money, or maybe you actually need the money. Excuse me. SMA accounts have become popular recently because technology has improved. So separately managed accounts can harvest capital losses on the individual stock basis and then reinvest them pretty easily without violating the wash sale rule. Just be careful of those things and know what you're doing, whether you use an SMA account or whatever you're doing. Just be careful. And even those capital losses can even offset future capital gains, and or they can certainly offset a small amount of income, $3,000. So tax loss harvesting. Number four, I'm signing the four again, Roth conversions. Valuations are low. So if you were going to convert, but the tax bill was too high, valuations are lower, your tax bill should be lower. Doesn't mean it's the right decision. The tax tail should not wag the investment dog. And that goes for tax loss harvesting as well. But the Roth conversion might be a good idea because valuations are low. Same go if your income's low as well. The tax brackets are use it or lose it. Make sure it's the right decision for you. But if you were on the fence about converting now while you have a 20% pullback from the top, again, you don't know where it's going to stop, it might be a good idea. Things to watch for: unintended consequences. So that means, and this happens to a lot of folks who they increase their income through a Roth conversion. And I know advisors who have gotten fired for for this in the past, where the client just didn't know, where they normally get a property tax rebate. And there's all sorts of deductions and credits rely on income levels. Property tax rebate in Minnesota happens to be one of them that's fairly large. And all of a sudden, they went to file their taxes. They're used to getting a $2,000, and I'm just making up a number, although it's not uncommon, to see a $2,000 property tax rebate. Well, the person liked getting this, the family did, and they also would use the money to go down to the Dells. If you're a Gen Xer from the 90s and you remember Martin Zeller and the Gear Daddies, The Dream Vacation in the Dells, Google it, great song. This client was used to it. So this client fired the advisor, was very upset, very angry. We're all emotional creatures. I don't blame the client for getting upset. What I find interesting in some of these situations, if the client had known in advance to where they had time to absorb the cost. So it's not just the taxes, it's what other things you might miss out on from having a higher tax rate than you did the previous year with the Roth conversion. They still might have moved ahead. They knew what to expect. Where many people get upset, and it's understandable, is it's unexpected, where they didn't see it coming, that they're used to that. And in some cases, I don't like the word irrational, but they have this attachment to maybe a certain rebate. Even if you could show them that they were financially better off still doing the conversion, that maybe they just had to live to age 80 and it would mean thousands and thousands of more dollars than it cost them. They still don't like it. So I get where folks are coming from. So just be aware, you as an individual, or if advisors are listening, make sure your clients are aware. And you as an individual, make sure you're aware of what you might lose out on. Don't recoil from it. Just instantly put some thought into it. It still might be worth doing, but be aware of what the cost is, especially from lost credits or deductions. Also be aware of the five-year rule. Anything with a Roth has a five-year rule. Roth contributions have a very easygoing five-year clock. So contributions and the earnings attached to those. Each Roth conversion has its own five-year rule. And I would make sure you understand how that works. Now, again, if you're not touching that money for 10 years, no harm, no foul. And obviously, you want to make sure you're actually in retirement. It's a qualified distribution. But just be aware of the five-year rule. Roth 401ks have their own separate five-year rule. Roth contributions, you just have to open up and fund that Roth, any Roth IRA, any place, and those earnings are available after 5 years and age 59 and a half. Roth contributions themselves are available anytime, tax penalty free. So it gets a little complex. I guess the main takeaway is just be aware of the five-year rules and think about when you're going to access the fund. Also, one strategy is that you could move higher risk assets from your traditional IRA, just journal over the shares while they're lower priced, with the idea that they're going to grow more within your Roth. Therefore, you're going to have more Roth assets. So what this might do is leave lower risk assets inside your traditional accounts, or say your traditional IRA. And when you get to retirement, you have to look at your portfolio as a whole. You have to be comfortable with your different accounts behaving differently, and some folks aren't. Some folks want some symmetry into the way the performance of their accounts. But this is one strategy where you can do that now during a lower stock market. And when and if those risky assets come back, your Roth accounts will be higher than your traditional accounts. They'll most likely be riskier, but having that larger Roth assets, remember Roths don't have required minimum distributions, things are tax-free in retirement, all those positive things are Roth assets, assuming the Roth is right for you, either a Roth contribution or a Roth conversion. It all depends on your tax profile now and what you think it might be in retirement. So there we have. We gave you four great tools to not just be scared, but to take advantage of this market downturn. Thank you for joining us. Please subscribe. Please download. Please come back for another episode. Thank you, everybody. We'll